I'm going to talk about how to build a power proportional software router. So you can see many affiliations here, but this work has been done while we all were at Intel Labs in Berkeley. So the main motivation for this work comes from the fact that networking devices have to be provisioned for peak load, but they are in the long run underutilized on average. And they are operating typically in a very inefficient region and consumes up to 90% of their maximum power even without any traffic. So we are also assisting at larger and larger deployments of network appliances like WAN optimizers, firewalls, intrusion detection systems, and so on. And these devices are typically based on general purpose hardware. So And we believe that they can benefit from the result of this work. So the challenge here, as I said, is how can we actually build such a system, such an energy efficient software router? We want a router that can adapt dynamically to the incoming traffic and consumes and use resources in proportion to this incoming traffic. But of course, we don't want big losses in performance. We want it to still be able to reach the peak packet forwarding rate. So in our solution that I'm going to show you, we were able to reduce the energy consumption by up to 50% for trading off latency for a small amount of approximately 10 microseconds. So our prototyping platform is a commodity x86 server running Linux and the Qlik modular router in kernel mode. So our system mounted four 10 gigabits network interfaces. And such a system like this has been shown to be quite fast for packet processing by some research project and NetMap too, that Luigi is going to present later. The good thing with such a platform and is that we can use operating system primitives for low power. I'm going to cover briefly the hardware mechanisms that we used in this work. So in order to scale with growing traffic rates and make the best use of multi-core architectures, modern network interfaces implements multi-queue operations. So that means that the incoming traffic is split among multiple hardware queues on a flow basis, based on a hash that is computed on the five tuple of the packet. And in this way, we can make sure that in the operating system or in the application directly, that each core gets traffic from only one hardware queue, so that there is no contention between multiple cores in reading the traffic from the interface. So the main question in this work in building an energy efficient device is, do we need to use all the cores all the time, or instead, how many queues and cores do we want to use? So the primitives for low power are well known. There are two ways to reduce the power consumption of a CPU. So for each core, we have C states that are basically sleep states in which part of the core are turned off. Either the core is clock gated or power gated, the cache is turned off, and so on and so on. And the other mechanism is well known too, and is dynamic voltage and frequency scaling, also called P states, in which you will get to tune the frequency individual cores. So we started our analysis by breaking down the power consumption of the system into single components. And we want to answer two basic questions. We want to know where does the power go, which are the components that are consuming more power, and how this does this power scale with the amount of incoming traffic. So the graph shows the power breakdown by component in three basic experiments. In the first one, we have the server completely idle. In the second one, we have a click loaded, but no incoming traffic. In the third one, we have a click running and processing packets at line rate. So the first thing you can notice is that the idle power is very high. The bad news about that is that this depends on the hardware platform, and there's nothing we can do about it in software. And also, you can see that the CPUs are the most power-hungry components, and they expose a quite high dynamic range. So we are going to tackle the problem on this side, and that's the way to do things in software. Regarding the memory and the network interfaces, even if they expose a dynamic range, in practice, this is negligible compared to the power consumption of the CPU. So the good thing about the idle power of the platform is that the idle power is trending down. This graph shows the data from spec power. And as you can see for the last 3 years, as you can see in the last 3 years, both the single processor and dual processor systems idle power has been going down. So we're not going to address that, as I said before. Instead, the thing that we did first, we did quite straightforward improvement in software. So Qlik uses polling, a polling loop to get packets from the network, from all the hardware queues. This is very efficient performance-wise, but it's known to be bad for energy efficiency. So we implemented NaPi-like support inside Qlik. And as you can see from this graph, and the blue bars represent the NaPi solution, and the orange bars the Qlik and modified solution. With NaPi, we can get a more proportional behavior in power. This has some drawbacks in performances in latency. But we measured the latency involved with NaPi, and we measured it to be slightly more than the one with polling, about 5 microseconds. So it's acceptable for us. So to go in more detail, in our study of power consumption, we modeled power consumption for packet processing workloads, and we validated our analysis with experiments. I'm not going to show you the modeling here. It's all in the paper. If you're interested, I'm going to focus on the results of our measurement. So, and the goal of this analysis is to provide some guidelines for the implementation of power-saving algorithms. So there are three main knobs that one can tune in a software algorithm to achieve power saving. So the first one, as I said before, is how many cores do we want to allocate to packet processing? The second, we can choose at what speed, at which speed each core is actually running. And then we will have some active cores and some inactive cores, and we have to choose what sleep states we want to use for both. So we divided our analysis in single core and multi core. In the single core case, if you were to have just a single core machine, you have two possible strategies. So the first one, that is commonly known as race to idle, consists in processing the workload as fast as possible and then enter a sleep state in order to maximize the sleep time. In just-in-time, instead, you want to minimize the sleep time because you don't want to pay the latency involved in transitioning into these low-power states, and you want to run at the lowest frequency that allows you to process the workload. In the multi-core case, instead, for a fixed number of CPU cycles, you have many possible configurations, so you want to choose the most energy efficient. And I'm going to show you which is for this kind of workload. So in the single core case, we measure the power consumption for a fixed rate. And in this case, the blue bars represent the just-in-time strategy. So we run the same workload at higher frequencies, as you can see in the green bars and orange bars. And as you can see, running at higher frequency at a higher frequency does not help. It just consumes more power. And this is due to the fact that for our specific workload, we are I/O bound. So by doubling the CPU, the CPU cycles, doesn't give us twice the performance. So, and also, we are paying the exit latency from sleep states. And so, what we suggest is to run the just-in-time strategy. So, run at the minimum frequency that can keep up with the incoming rate. In the multi-core case, the main question is instead, is it better to run fewer cores at a higher frequency, or rather more cores at a lower frequency? So in this graph shows on the y-axis the per packet energy efficiency, so higher is better. And on the x-axis, we have k, that is an index for the total number of CPU cycles. So as you can see, it is more. It seems to be more efficient to allocate as many cores as possible to our workload and to operate them at the lowest possible frequency. So this will suggest to run all the cores all the time at the minimum frequency. Why are not we doing that? We're not doing that, and we do not suggest to do that because today's CPUs, there is a limited number of frequency levels available, and the first one is usually very high. In our case, in our machine, for example, it was half of the range. So if you use all the cores you have, even at the minimum frequency, you're gonna spare a lot of cycles, and it's not efficient. So our guideline is to. We suggest that you run the maximum number of cores that can be kept fully utilized, and you put the other cores in a sleep state. So the next question is, what sleep state should they use? So we measured the power consumption and the exit latency for the C states in our machine. And what we saw was that only the lightest sleep state, that is called C1, is suitable for active cores. You don't want to pay latency in the order of tens of microseconds for an active processing. So the next guideline is that you let underutilized core take quick naps. So going the in the not to not enter in deep sleep states. Deep sleep states are instead good for inactive cores. So given these guidelines, we implemented an algorithm that follows these guidelines. And we want, as I said at the beginning, to dynamically, this algorithm to decide dynamically how many cores to use and what frequency and C states to use for each core. So in this graph shows the total power of the system for the possible combination of number of cores and frequency levels. And we have one core here on the left and 12 cores on the right. So an optimal, an ideal algorithm should start with only one core at the lower speed. And as the load increases, we'll activate more cores and move on the green line. After all cores are active and we need more CPU cycles, our algorithm will start to increase the frequency of all cores together. This is also a thing that we need to do, because even if from the operating system you can fine-tune the, you believe that you fine-tune the frequency for all the cores, in practically the hardware will use the same frequency for one CPU in, for all the cores in the same package. So when the load increases instead, our algorithm will do the opposite. So we'll start decreasing the frequency of all the cores together, and then turning off cores when we have reached the lowest possible frequency. So such an algorithm will need a way to know which is the instantaneous traffic rate, or at least to estimate. So we provided a way to efficiently estimate whether the system is currently underloaded or overloaded. And we did that by implementing a controller that monitors the length of the hardware queues, so the queue occupancy. So based on this information, the controller is going to act directly and reprogram the redirection table that basically decides, based on the hash, on the results of the hash, the number of the queue that a packet will enter. And by reprogramming this table, we can consolidate the traffic. Let's say we are in a system that is underutilized. We are using too many CPU cycles in this example. So we can consolidate the traffic onto fewer cores. And by reprogramming this table, we can do that. And we can basically starve some queues of packets. So the traffic will be consolidated onto fewer cores that we, are processed by fewer cores. So the some of the cores will not receive traffic and will be inactive. So we can let these cores enter in the deepest sleep state possible, while the active cores will run at the lowest frequency at the beginning. So we evaluated the performance of this solution, of our solution, and we ran many applications. I'm going to show you here a few of these applications. We ran a simple IP routing. We ran NetFlow statistics collection, IPsec, and an algorithm for redundancy elimination. And so in these graphs, in all these graphs, you have on the x-axis the time. Each experiment is running for 5 minutes, and the total system power on the y-axis. And our solution is the represented by the green lines. The orange lines do represents the NAPI, the click with NAPI solution, and the blue lines the click original implementation. So as you can see, the click original with NAPI, you have all the CPUs running at 100% all the time. So the power consumption is pretty flat. With NAPI, we were able to get a more proportional behavior, but still we are using all the cores all the time, and we are not controlling the frequency, and we are relying on the standard Linux mechanisms. With our solution, instead, we are able to dynamically adjust the number of cores and the speed of each core. So we measured, on average, up to 30% savings with our system compared to the simple click with NAPI, and up to 50% compared with the polling solution. So we also measured latency, packet loss, and reordering. The first graph here shows the profile of the traffic that we generated in order to stress our controller. And we measured latency, and as I said at the beginning, we measured an increase that in average is about 10 microseconds compared to the polling solution, which is, in terms of performance, is still the better. And we can see this 10 microseconds increase in latency in the second graph. That still shows the five minutes experiments on the x-axis. So we also measured no packet loss and no reordering, and this could happen when we are waking up a queue. All of a sudden we start sending traffic to one core that is in the deepest sleep state. So is it possible that in that case we can experience reordering? But the high exit latency from the sleep states actually save us from from reordering. And about packet loss, you have to make sure that the queues are long enough to absorb the packets during the transient period. So to quickly recap and conclude, we have provided some guidelines for the implementation of power saving algorithm for packet processing workloads. These guidelines can be reassumed in running the smallest number of cores at their minimum frequency, and increase the number of cores before you start increasing the frequency. So in this way, you are going to make the best use of power-hungry resources in a modern server for packet processing workloads. And we provided an online algorithm, an implementation of our online algorithm. This algorithm is based on a controller that can monitor the queue length and react quickly to changes in this length. And as I said in the last slide, you have to make sure the queues are long enough. Otherwise, you're going to lose packets. And with our solution, up to 50% savings are possible compared to simple, straightforward implementation. And of course, it depends on the application, because more CPU-bound workloads will experience less savings. So in the end, I want to thank Intel for providing the hardware and the facilities where I did this work, and also Riverbed Technology that hired me and is sponsoring me for being here today. So thanks.
Wenjifang Fermilab. I have a question. When you do manipulate the redirector table and shut down some queue and shift the traffic from some core to some other core, could it be possible you overload some other cores?
Yeah, it is possible. But I mean, that's the role of the controller. So the controller is based on, it's a threshold-based algorithm. So if you are overloading other cores, you're basically you're gonna detect that after, and you're gonna probably oscillate for a while and then reach the stable configuration.
So, have you seen some overload happens in your experiment?
We have actually experienced that only with our synthetic workloads, not for real traces. So, because you get that only for a specific amount of traffic, and if you and if that is stable in time. In a real system, the traffic is gonna is not gonna be at the same level. There are of course some zeros in the controlling system.
Okay, and also I had a question. You say there's no packet ordering happens because of the exit latency is too long, so you cannot see anything, right?
Can you repeat?
Because you have, it's possible to cause packet ordering because you manipulated the redirector table. So traffic shifts from some queue to another queue, and then, but the from the, you wake up some CPUs from the sleep state to the wake state because the latency is too long, so the packet ordering doesn't happen.
Right.
Okay.
Yeah, so basically, you have all the packets from the same flow that are going based on the hash function in the same queue. When you modify the redirect table, you're gonna, you can have these packets from the very same flow go to another queue that is empty, right?
That's right. That.
Right. But the core that is managing this empty queue will have to first wake up from the sleep
state. The latency
state.
Is pretty long, so.
Yeah. So the sleep and the exit latency is long enough that.
Okay.
Doesn't give us
okay, thank you.
A reordering. Yeah, thanks.
Hi. Herbert Bos, the University, Amsterdam. Nice work.
Thanks.
I was thinking, there's one other thing that you could do, right? You could split up your network stack in different components and run, you know, say, I don't know, a driver, IPsec, run that on different cores at different frequencies.
Right.
Have you considered that?
We didn't consider that in this work. We addressed only
because clearly some of these components will require, you know, low frequencies. Others might then run at higher frequency, and you can still get the
yeah. Or you can also run IPsec on a GPU. But no, we didn't consider that. Yeah, okay. But that's worthwhile, I think.
Thanks.
Hi, I'm Al-Fahad, University of Rochester. So with the bursty nature of network traffic, how much time, you said that the latency would suffer like around 10 microseconds, but what is the longest latency you've encountered for do the, you know, routing process?
So
meaning that, you know, how much time does it take to wake up, shut down the cores that you have?
Yeah, right. We measured also the maximum latency we got from during our experiments. I was showing the average latency, but we also measured the maximum, and it's in the order of the time you wake up from a sleep state. So it's less than 100 microseconds.
Thank you.